welcome to The Reading Room, the Diagnostic Imaging Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Whitney Palmer. Today, I am joined by Matthew Michaela to discuss how data can improve our understanding of COVID-19, what we have learned from the pandemic, and what best practices facilities can implement to bolster their interoperability and accessibility. Mr. Michaela, a 30-year healthcare industry veteran, is the President and Chief Executive Officer of the interoperability company LifeImage.
Well, thank you, Matt, for joining me this morning. I appreciate your taking the time to talk about the importance of and the role of interoperability during the pandemic. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you for the opportunity. Good to talk with you.
It's my pleasure. Glad you're here. Well, to jump in, let's kind of start, at the largest part of the conversation. You know, what makes imaging data such a critical part of this pandemic fight? You know, what role does it have when we're thinking about this outbreak?
Well, I mean, it might seem obvious, right? But the coronavirus is a respiratory, illness here. And so radiology and imaging, right, play really a critical role in both in the diagnosis and the treatment and even post-acute, monitoring of patients that have severe respiratory, illnesses here. In particular, the coronavirus that we're experiencing now also, it appears, has a lot of secondary, impacts on other organs, right? So the heart, brain, even eyes, et cetera. I hear all that really require advanced imaging in order to understand and be able to monitor here. And what we're finding, while in the United States, the radiology societies haven't, fully endorsed imaging as the methodology to diagnose this particular coronavirus. They are doing that internationally and, a consensus of radiologists from, I believe it's 10 different countries around the around the globe have come together and published a consensus statement in the Journal of Radiology that suggested that imaging should indeed be done as an early indicator and as a support for diagnosis for coronavirus, other than in mild cases here. So it's really, very crucial, and I think we're going to find that not just immediately now during the pandemic, but many of these subsequent healthcare conditions that become chronic and actually are very severe, or things are going to last long after, the pandemic is under control.
All right. Well, you touched on this a little bit, but, what are the roadblocks to fulfilling the role and kind of realizing the potential that imaging data has? And, why is it critical at this juncture that the industry find a way to kind of overcome those stumbling blocks?
Well, I think what we're finding right here during this pandemic is that the traditional, behavior and patterns of care, the networks, the relationships, the referral relationships have all broken down, right? As the pandemic has rolled through, we've centralized patients, we moved them to different sites, we have different doctors and physicians and approaches for, treatment of patients. And so therefore, kind of the historical data, right? The medical records from the past and the relationships between patients and doctors isn't there during this, severe treatment of patients. And what we find, right, in that regard, right, and this is, according to the CDC, right, of the 120 to 125,000, right, cases that were reported here, less than 6%, I think their number was 5.8% of patients actually had data that was available for their underlying health conditions and potential risk factors when they were actually being treated, right, for coronavirus, which is a significant, quality of care problem. And that is due to really not our system, unfortunately, out there being non-interoperable here, to not have the data available, at a different, site of care. Additionally, what I think we're finding in this particular kind of set of circumstances is because this is an infectious disease here, handling of CDs and physical media, which is unfortunately still the majority of way that method that imaging is available to patients and to providers inside the United States, which is tragic, quite frankly, because it's a very old approach, old technology, and there's so many more mature ways from a technology point of view of accessing that data. But nevertheless, CDs are an infection risk, right? You have to have somebody that picks it up and somebody that carries it and somebody that ingests it and somebody that moves it around, right? And we don't need to be doing that and increasing our risk factors in hospitals that set up these, intensive protocols for management of disease to have this be a loophole that's overlooked just because of, historical practice.
All right. So with all of that as a backdrop, you know, what have we learned, I guess, so far from the pandemic that, that can be actionable as we continue to look forward?
I think what we learned, right, is that interoperability isn't just a, you know, phrase, but it's an actual real thing that we absolutely need inside healthcare. And we've been talking about, you know, interoperability, at least I have, you know, for more than three decades that I've been in healthcare. But I think with this pandemic, has you know, clearly shown across the system is that this is essential. It's not a nice to have, and it's not a I'll get to it next year issue. It's something we have to have today in order to make the system actually run, in order to treat patients, in order to lower costs. I mean, there's just tremendous benefits of interoperability and such tremendous harm without it. I think this has really brought to the forefront for people that this is something that absolutely has to happen now. When you think also about the coronavirus and you recognize that, you know, while on the news, right, we have been talking for a long time about its impact in major metropolitan areas, it's actually in, you know, the, you know, more rural areas where folks then have even less access to care, less access, right, to historical data here. And that's having significant impact to the experience that they're having. You know, all across the country here.
All right. Well, then speaking specifically in the context of the coronavirus, you know, we're starting to see, I guess, either the continuation of the first wave or really a ramp up of the second wave and largely throughout the country. So how can we parlay those lessons into helping hospitals prepare for that next wave? You know, what can they do or what do they need to do to be better prepared for this next go around?
So I think we have an opportunity, right? In the first phase or two, right, of this pandemic, unfortunately, right, it hit so quickly and such a shock of the system. We had to deal with, you know, very real logistical problems. Do we have enough ICUs? Do we have enough ventilators? Do we have doctors in the right place? Do we understand infection control, right? And then, unfortunately, right, as we stopped elective procedures and hospitals took a financial shock, they started to furlough administrative staff and folks that actually are really required, right, to manage this, you know, in the long run. Now they're coming back a bit and the administrative staffs are starting to come back, starting to now think about exactly your question is what happens, right, as this continues over time and how do we ultimately manage that, right? And the things that institutions that are ahead of their curve and are focusing on really is increasing their interoperability, increasing the number of connections that they have with other providers and community providers, whether it's, you know, connecting to, you know, a hospital ship, right, in New York or the Javits Center, or quite frankly, right, the 25 community hospitals that sit around you as a, if you're a major tertiary care facility, that you've just never bothered to go ahead and get a digital connection. We're finding they are, right, working with folks like Image in order to increase the number of connections that they have, right? And the way imaging generally has been kind of managed in the past, right, had been a major institution will say, well, I'll digitally connect to only my top five referral centers because that's where there's volume, right? And I don't want to pay to be connected to the other 35 I get patients from because there's just not enough volume for me to be bothered. And those that are more advanced are recognizing saying, no, we actually have to connect to all of them. We actually have to stop getting CDs. We have to stop moving records and imaging around on physical media. We need the data on these patients and their history right now, today, not in 5 days or 7 days or 14 days when the coronavirus, you know, has created, you know, damage, right, here that we could have prevented and helped manage a little bit earlier. So it's really taking this window of opportunity now to create those connections inside the community. This is not rocket science, right? It's hard technology, right? But it's very mature. It's been in existence for 10 to 15 years. This is not brand new innovation. This is literally just saying, I'm really going to change my practice and change the behaviors, which means they've got to educate their staff. Because what we find inside hospitals and all across healthcare, across the board, is people get used to doing things a certain way and then they don't necessarily change. And so even in this, you know, aspect of a pandemic, it's very easy for staff to return back to, you know, those protocols and say, well, we've always done it this way. This is easy. And it's a little bit extra work to make a phone call to a vendor to get this set up or to make it happen. And I just won't do that. It won't be a priority. So the institutions have to really focus on education of their staff and pressing on this, because it's completely doable. We have customers that do this. We work in all the major metropolitan areas. So especially in New York, we really, they pressed very hard, right, on their staff to get more connections. I hear Mount Sinai was a terrific example of that, and a longstanding customer of LifeImage. We've got upstate hospitals in New York where patients would be transferred that recognize we better get this taken care of. So we have that, information here. So the lessons really learned here, again, it's all about interoperability, because patients don't have the data, they can't be cared for appropriately. If patients, have to deal with physical media, then the hospitals are at risk, both for higher cost and for, infection control. And it's literally just getting it done as a priority here. I think we've accepted intellectually that that's what has to happen, and it's just a matter of pressing through that.
Right. Well, then building off of those lessons learned, when we think about actual implementation or education of staff and facilities, can you suggest some best practices, some nuts and bolts direction on how hospitals can truly begin to make their data accessible to others to share knowledge during this time?
Sure. So I think there's I think there's some confusion in the industry, right? We've got the new O&C rules that mandate interoperability here, and that's coming, right, here. And I had publicly called for a delay in the enforcement, which I was glad to see that they did for a few months, just given the fact that the pandemic really has hit providers very hard, right? I'm glad to see that. And I'm also glad to see that vendors, right, we're not given a break. Right, we really have to push that interoperability. But where the confusion comes in is those rules, right, don't solve all of the problems. What those rules do is set a basic foundation of a minimal data set. And much of that data, right, is the low-hanging fruit, right, the discrete data that sits inside an EHR, its claims data, its payment data. So there are things that ultimately are important to get transparency across the system. But whether I had prior image and how much I paid for that image, and imaging and what date, right, which is in that minimal data set, doesn't actually help, right, in treatment or diagnosis or ongoing monitoring of a condition. You need the actual true clinical data that sits underneath, right, the EHR, which is not in this first initial data set, which is the actual imaging itself, the actual pathology, itself, et cetera, not just a report and a summary and a three-sentence, paragraph that sits in the text field inside, an EHR. That technology actually exists, right? At LifeImage, right? We've been for a decade and a half, almost have been moving, and we touch, hundreds of millions of patients in any given year accessing their data. Nevertheless, we're still, the majority of imaging is, still moved by CD. So when it comes to a hospital and institution for best practices here, what I would suggest is number one, work with established vendors, right, in the space. Right, there's unfortunately in pandemic period here, there's a lot of folks who are trying to change their business models. They're trying to create new solutions, right? I'm going to say this in this way, I don't mean it, but jumping on the COVID bandwagon in order to try to make sure that they're relevant. And that's great, right? I'm a big supporter of innovation and for making sure that your companies are relevant. But unfortunately, right, when it comes to healthcare interoperability, especially around some of the more challenging types of data, which is the unstructured clinical data, of which imaging is very likely one of the most important elements of that, it's something that takes a while to develop this technology and get it implemented. And so I would recommend, right, and I don't mean it to be self-serving, but honestly, for the industry, go with folks that have actually been doing this for a while, because, at LifeImage, as an example, we have applications and technology that can set up sharing literally within an hour, right, within institutions. It doesn't have to take 3 months. It doesn't have to take millions of dollars of investment here in order to, get it done. If you use folks that understand what they're doing here, and this is where they ultimately sit. The second lesson is, and I have constantly, right, have emphasized this, don't work with vendors that really don't have their heart into interoperability, right? There are those out there and a lot of these very big institutions that are getting dragged into the O&C rules, kicking and screaming, right? These are the folks that either that don't see that their business model has benefited from interoperability, it's benefited by holding data in data silos. And irrespective, they may provide tremendous value. They may actually be, you know, giving away some solutions for very low cost or for free in order to get you to stay inside their technology stack. But ultimately, right, I think what providers, what hospitals are going to need to do, they're going to have to put their foot down and say, this is just baloney and we're just not going to work with you. We will work with other folks that are interoperable, because if we don't break that stranglehold from these companies that really don't embrace this and have not embraced it yet, they're just going to drag these providers down over time. And it's patients ultimately, you know, that get affected here. So number one, work with folks that actually know what they're doing, have experience doing it, have done it at scale, because fixing the problem later in technology is obviously much harder than just doing it right, you know, the first time. Second, really work with folks that believe in interoperability and don't hold your, you know, data captive. You know, and the third, just, you know, be careful and be critical of claims, right, by vendors that say, well, I'm really, really good at this. Now I'm a telehealth company. I'm really, really good at this. Now I'm an imaging company, right? Maybe they will be, but in this time period of, you know, unfortunately, pandemic, when we have no resources, no time, no money, short staff in most of these institutions, they don't have time for monkey business. They just need to focus on this quality of care and make that happen.
Right. Well, you alluded to this a little bit earlier, but, you know, are there some real world examples that you have of organizations, facilities that have done this well, you know, throughout the pandemic that, you know, probably gives them a running start on handling the next wave as best as possible?
So I think that there are, right? And what we experienced, right, as I had mentioned, right, in metropolitan New York, which got hit, you know, so hard here in the early stages, right? Almost their first reaction was, we're moving patients around and let's make sure that we can access data we need and move that around. So we've had, you know, numerous requests throughout, you know, metropolitan New York and the general Albany area of existing customers of Life Image that literally just picked the phone up and said, I have a problem, can you help me, right? And in many regards, that could be done that day, right, here, because they understood, you know, who we were in the technology and we could make that happen. Right. You know, I think, you know, there are, I guess I would say it this way. I think we saw slightly less responsiveness out of the delivery systems in the Northwest, right, that were hit a little bit sooner. Right. And I think took a slightly different approach of, we'll keep our patients inside, you know, our facilities here and manage them. And so they acted very, very kind of differently as in their approach for this. But, you know, our customer base here at Life Image and our network is so big and broad. We sit in every metropolitan area in the United States. And so wherever there's an outbreak here, odds are we're there. And so the customers that have kind of their, and hospitals that have their heads on straight, right? I guess I shouldn't say it that way, right? That have the ability to focus on this, you know, this challenge here, are increasing, right, their connections and ultimately making that work. I would always highlight Mount Sinai. I think they have been a leader in interoperability for decades in imaging and continue to press on that. So they recognized it kind of immediately. I hear that that was important, and that's one of the things that, you know, they should do. But, you know, frankly, it was all around the country. There were really good examples of this happening. You know, the other would be, I would suggest, is, you know, the federal government. Right. So while the, you know, VA systems shut down, right, to deal with kind of COVID here, you know, at the federal level through the Department of Defense and through the Veterans Administration, they have been, you know, pushing new RFPs and RFIs out the door here in order to establish, you know, emergency networks and interoperability within providers, recognizing that they will have a significant role over time. So I think some of those things will be, you know, important. Here, once they get established in the long run, might not get established necessarily in 2020 here, because putting things on a national scale are very large. But I think you're going to start to see some of the more formal structures out of the Department of Defense and the VA hospitals play ever more important roles over time in management of you know, this pandemic, and not just for our veterans, but even inside the community.
Well, then, based on the experience that you've seen in the industry and thinking about, you know, the, again, the next wave, you know, what are the benefits that come with getting as close to true interoperability as possible. And, you know, thinking along the lines of time savings or monetary benefits, anything along those lines.
Sure. I mean, so interoperability, right, improves, frankly, every metric that you would ever ultimately have across, you know, healthcare, right? If you have the information you need, right, to make a decision, because it's accessible to you here, you're going to make a better clinical decision, right? There are many, many, especially some of the most complicated clinical situations. You know, physicians make the best judgment and the best choice they can with the data that's available. And you have data that is missing and has gaps. Sometimes those decisions are not as informed as they should be, and that affects patient care. And this is, you know, not a nice to have. This is life and death, right? The progression of this disease in especially vulnerable, you know, populations move very, very fast, and it's very, very dangerous. And not understanding that the patient's history and what kind of complexities they've gone through, what kind of medications they might have beyond here is in many cases the difference between life and death for these patients here. So this is about quality of care to start. Does it save money? Absolutely, right? Interoperability means you don't have duplicate testing, right, that goes on here. And that's incredibly substantial. I mean, we may have, you know, outside of pandemic, just in a, you know, in a non-pandemic world, right, there are studies that talk about somewhere between 40 and 60%, right, of all imaging that occurs across the United States is completely duplicative, right, because somebody doesn't have a CD or didn't transfer it or couldn't push, you know, something digitally across, you know, across a network here, which when you think about, you know, some of this advanced imaging is incredibly expensive. It's hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. And to do it twice or three times because, you know, a provider decided that they didn't want to spend 4 cents to transfer, you know, a piece of data electronically here is ultimately tragic. And so it saves costs for the system. It saves costs for the patient. You know, it saves costs for, you know, physicians, for providers, and for hospitals, because when they do deal with physical media, right, they've got to have staff to do that. I mean, as mundane as it sounds, they've got somebody who's got to take that CD, who gets paid to take the CD, that gets paid to upload the CD in a device, a CD, you know, machine, which frankly you have to buy specially now because it's not like they come standardly across, you know, systems, and patients don't even have them anymore. So all across, right, the system, non-interoperability, especially in imaging, right, is, you know, is incredibly, you know, costly. And again, one of these kind of unfortunate kind of ways that in the past, right, a hospital might have thought about this, they say, well, I've connected, as I mentioned to my earlier, to my top five referral centers, because I'm paying for that. And I'm not going to connect to the other 25 or 30 or 40 or 45 where I receive patients. It costs them far more, right, to manually process a CD. Right, it's in some cases, right, it costs us 8, 9, 10 times more costly to deal with a physical CD, of having the staff and the workflow and the process ultimately do that, than to have it digitally transferred and, you know, properly, you know, ingested into your systems and available, right, to your providers, you know, in minutes within their own workflow and their own EHR. But you've got to budget for it, and we budgeted for the staff, and we budgeted for that workflow. And that's a part of our budget. We didn't actually budget for the 1/10 the cost of that it would take to digitize it. So the way even inside the systems we think about this administratively, and we budget it and think about capital and operating costs, right, is again one of those things we have to change, which is why I mentioned a bit earlier, right, one of the big lessons here for institutions, they have to educate their staff. They have to think about these things and say, look, just because we've always done it that way doesn't mean we should. And, you know, we've noted in the last, we'll say 4 months or so, across the board, you know, many hospitals are getting the picture here, and are pushing along. I think in the last, since the pandemic started, as an example at Life Image, we've increased our connections for our existing hospital customers by more than 500 hospitals, right, just in the last handful of months. So just to give you a sense of these major metropolitan areas, where they have embrace this and said, let's just get it done, right? 500 hospitals is an awful lot of expansion inside of our network in order to deal with exactly this issue. You know, the prior, I think, 3 years, we hadn't added 500, right, in the prior 36 months. So people are getting the idea here.
Absolutely. Well, and it also sounds like they're addressing some of the challenges that, we talked about earlier. But again, kind of looking forward, you know, once those challenges are addressed, you know, what have we learned from these past few months about other potential problems that we could see coming down the road as far as, you know, greater interoperability, education, dealing with administrators, if there's any pushback, anything along those lines, I guess challenges or stumbling blocks that have not yet been encountered that could be coming.
I think that what we're going to see next, unfortunately, and I don't believe is getting enough attention, right, in the industry, is really the post-acute, you know, care and monitoring of patients once COVID-19 its initial courses run, right? So the effects on organ systems, right? Heart, lungs, brain, et cetera, here are things that, you know, the focus is let me get you stable and let me get you home. And I suspect, right, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months later, many of those patients are going to continue to have significant issues here, not just with a, hey, you know, can you get COVID-19 twice, right? That's getting some attention. But the question is these hundreds of thousands of people that are spread throughout the United States that now have materially deteriorated health conditions. They survived, but they have things that really have to be taken care of over time. And I don't think it's getting enough attention. And that's, again, where imaging comes in. And so one of the things is an example that we've done at Life Image is we are offering, right, to patients, right, that the opportunity, right, to create and maintain their own personal, right, digital health record, right, where we've got an application called our Patient Connect Portal, where a patient can sign up, get their own online account, and then collect their medical records, and not just the data that's mandated by the ONC here, but actual imaging itself, so that they can take that responsibility. So that when they want to receive ongoing care, they've got the ability to transfer that data digitally to their providers themselves and not be reliant on the hospital where they were treated for COVID that might be 40 miles away from where they live, remembers and is kind enough to send that data the next time it gets used, but to take more control over that. And I think we're going to start to see other solutions and applications like that really empower patients, right, in this idea that healthcare consumerism is actually fundamentally important and will be I think, driver for patients to help take care of themselves here and not be reliant on a system that is distressed and overwhelmed in order to be able to do that for them. And so I think this post, you know, acute circumstance of management of, you know, COVID patients, you know, is going to be important and needs probably more discussion and more attention than it's getting today.
Right. Well, Matt, I appreciate this. Is there anything that we did not touch on that you think is important to point out in the role that interoperability has during the pandemic or going forward?
I guess with that, you know, close, I reinforce that within the delivery systems, it's very easy within hospitals, providers, right, to be distracted by ultimately what's urgent in front of you. And that's important, right, to focus on what's urgent. What's also important is to focus on, you know, what actually is essential in the long run to improve quality care and lower costs, which really is interoperability. So, I would just reinforce they should press their vendors and they should press their staff to actually solve these problems, right? The government has been tremendously, I think, supportive how they thought about HIPAA and how they thought about penalties around that for folks that are acting, right, in good faith in order to take care of patients and increase interoperability. Let's take advantage of that and continue to drive that forward here. Because this situation we have, unfortunately, is going to continue for a while. And it won't be the last time, unfortunately, that we have this kind of pandemic. So let's make healthcare as interoperable as finances and virtually every other industry. And get that taken care of now, and we'll be much better off as a society for that.
All right. Well, Matt, thank you again for taking the time this morning. I really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Whitney. I appreciate the opportunity. Good speaking with you again.
You too.
Thank you, Mr. Michaela, for joining me. And thank you for listening to The Reading Room. And as always, visit www.diagnosticimaging.com for the latest in radiology news.